Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Open Minds Radio with Alejandro Rojas. Open Minds Radio is your UFO news authority, presenting evidence and the latest news regarding the UFO phenomenon. Here's your host, Alejandro Rojas.
Hello and welcome to Open Minds Radio. This is Alejandro Rojas, just like the gentleman has said. And you are listening to Open Minds Radio, and it's very exciting today because we have Mr. Chuck Zukowski. Chuck, you might have seen a story that we wrote about Chuck recently, and in fact, it was also kind of around Colorado media. So if you're from Colorado, you probably saw this on the news, that Chuck, unfortunately, was fired as a deputy sheriff because he was doing paranormal investigations. So that is not cool whatsoever. So we're going to have Chuck on the show to talk about that. And also, one of the things he was getting so much media attention for lately was that he was doing cattle mutilation research. And we'll talk about some of his latest findings there, because there has been a lot of mutilations going on in the last couple of years in Colorado. So we will be talking about that. So that's going to be really exciting. Chuck's always a lot of fun. So stay tuned. Also, subscribers have been asking about the magazine. It's en route if you haven't gotten your latest April-May issue yet. And it's a pretty exciting one. It's got lots of cool stories in it. In fact, we had Robert Hastings, who, along with Robert Salas, put together a press conference in September where they had some military officers come to talk about UFOs at nuclear facilities. And Robert Hastings wrote a book called UFO Nukes, and he is the expert at that subject. So, very cool. We've had him on the show before. We've had Salas on the show. We've also had Colonel Holt on the show, who was also part of that. But that's what the article in the magazine is all about. So this is going to be a real fun one. We've got, UFOs in New York, because there were some sightings out there, a story on that we wrote. Jason has something on Chinese lanterns, because that's been a big story. And I think we told you all, we went and launched them. And I believe, because I haven't heard anything, that in my little town of Maricopa, that we didn't light anything on fire, that they were safe launches that came back to Earth unlit and safely. Hopefully nobody got hurt. No squirrel got caught in it. Oh, that'd be awful. So some cool stories that we have in there. What else? Gary McKinnon. I wrote about Gary McKinnon. What did Antonio do for this one? I can't remember. I should write down the stories. I can't tell everybody everything anyway, though, because they got to get the magazine and check it out themselves, because it's also at the bookstore any minute now.
Well, and also that magazine was put together a little while ago, and we're already another magazine into the process. So it's hard to remember everything that was in that.
True.
That issue.
Because now we're working on our special Roswell edition, and that's going to be coming out in June. So, and this is really cool. Some of you are like, oh, man, I know all about Roswell. Well, wait till you see this magazine, because we've got Don Schmidt writing about tons of witnesses talking about the actual creatures that were seen. I mean, the evidence, which is quite substantial, that there was a being that was captured there. We've got information about the best movie ever on Roswell by Paul Davids, who we've had on the show. And the guy who discovered the whole thing, you might not know that, Stanton Friedman, and he talks about how that all started and how he discovered it and the initial research and how all that happened and more. So lots of cool stuff on that. Coming soon. Coming even sooner is the news, because, of course, you notice on our website that we do news on a daily basis, the headlines from around the world on the UFO subject. And, of course, if you're part of our Facebook, you'll see that as well. Unfortunately, you can't be part of the Open Minds Like Radio Facebook anymore because it's full. But that's okay, because you can go to Open Minds Magazine. Just go to Facebook, and if you're on the Internet, do that right now. Go to Facebook and search for Open Minds Magazine and like it, and then you'll get all of those updates. And you can have all of your friends do this because we're not capped at 5,000 for that, like we are with our other Facebook. So, unfortunately, sorry all you guys who are trying to friend us on Facebook and we can't do it. 5,000 limit for some reason. So go check that out, and you'll see the headlines. And if you can't wait for that, well, then let's just get Jason on the air here and have him tell us about the news. Jason, hello.
Hi, Alejandro. How are you today?
Doing all right. Doing all right.
Excellent. Before I get into the news, I want to ask you, did you happen to see the supermoon?
I did.
Did you?
Yeah.
Were you blown away?
Yeah, it reminded me of, you know, if there's some other, there's people who probably watch Dragon Ball Z, and when Goku goes Super Saiyan, he like lights up and roar before he does a Kamehameha, and it was like that.
I'll continue staring at you blankly. I wasn't that impressed, I've got to say. It was kind of cloudy out here.
Yeah.
And I've seen the moon much larger.
Well, that's the thing.
I think we got screwed here. But.
Well, we've talked about that before, and I think this is one of those incredible things in astronomy that when the moon is lower on the horizon, how it looks really big, it's not closer.
Right.
In fact, the moon was at its closest point when at this supermoon moment this weekend, but nobody knows why. Scientists can still not explain why the moon looks so big at the horizon but looks so small.
There's a whole lot that scientists can't explain.
That's true.
And that is one of them.
Yep.
But let's get into the news. Greetings, everyone. This is your Open Minds News Brief for Monday, March 21st, 2011. The Origins Project at Arizona State University is presenting a science and culture festival at which famed Simpsons character Stephen Hawking, who's also an actual real-life astrophysicist, will be delivering a lecture. The Origins Project's website describes the festival as a celebration of the interface between science, the humanities, and the fine arts. The festival will also feature the Dear Aliens Contest Award Ceremony. We talked about this Dear Aliens Contest a couple weeks ago. This is a contest that was launched by Hawking's daughter, Lucy, and she asked students to submit answers to the following question. If you had to speak for humanity, what would you say? Submissions will be reviewed by a panel of alien experts made up of writers, scientists, and scholars, and the winner will be announced at the award ceremony, which is open to the public. Contest winners will have their message broadcast into space at the event. They're actually going to bounce it off the moon.
Wow.
The Origins Project Science and Culture Festival takes place at various locations on ASU's Tempe campus from April 7th through April 11th. And from what I read at the Dear Aliens Contest Award Ceremony, ASU Professor Paul Davies will also be there. And we've talked about Paul Davies before on the show, and he's actually been a guest on the show.
Mm-hmm. He was a wonderful guest, I thought, personally.
He was a great guest, and he's a fascinating person to listen to. And he's got a couple books out, and he talks a lot about looking for extraterrestrial life here on Earth in the form of bacteria and things like that.
Yeah.
In your nose.
Yeah, he's the in-the-nose alien guy.
Right.
Really, is what he's kind of gotten in the news for a lot because he thinks there's these secondary biospheres, that alien life may be here right now and that in the microbial type of way and that there are these biospheres or these tracks of alien life on the planet, just as these little bacteria and stuff, that such as the bacteria that live in our nose. Why he had to bring up our nose in particular, I'm not quite sure.
Because I think a lot of people avoid the nose. That's sort of uncharted territory. People don't want to go looking in the nose.
Yeah. I mean, when you go to the doctor, he kind of explores that area. But, well, and there was that movie with Martin Short where he was kind of cruising around. And
I'm uncomfortable talking about the nose. Let's not talk about the nose anymore.
Next subject.
People don't like the nose. I don't like the nose. I don't think doctors like the nose.
Nobody knows the nose.
Shove that thing up your nose, they're just pretending.
Mm-hmm.
They're just trying to get it over with. They're not actually looking, because who wants to look up a nose?
Yeah, I wouldn't.
It's kind of gross.
That's gross.
Well, on sort of a similar subject to the essay contest that ASU was holding, Another school. We talk about this, it seems like, almost every week now. Another school in the UK chose extraterrestrials as the subject of a student creative writing project. Teachers at Week Primary School in Winchester, England, created a scenario last week where an alien egg UFO crashed on school grounds. Students investigated the staged crash site, complete with alien blood and slime. With the help of local police, student scientists from the University of Winchester, and a ufologist from the University of Warwick. Following their investigations, students were encouraged to write news reports for newspapers and television news. This is fascinating. Again, I think all of these teachers must have gone to the same teaching seminar or conference or something and all got the same idea. It's really weird. They're all using UFOs for their writing project.
You know what? And it helps. Now that you mentioned, because it's in the UK that they've been doing this mostly, which is true, and which is kind of strange that it's the UK, but the movie Paul was made by British blokes,
right,
who went through the UK schooling system, and they created this great, I saw it yesterday, I thought it was great, very funny movie about an alien, and just hanging out and being buddies with an alien.
They're starting them young over there.
Yeah. There's some conspiracy there.
There has to be something. But it is fascinating. I mean, we talk about this every single week. Another school doing the same thing or similar things, you know, staging a crash. And some of the schools have even had theater students dress up as extraterrestrial beings and interact with the students. And the students are required to interact and sort of show them around. And
well, I could see how the kids would get energized and get into it. And it would be imaginative. They would have a chance to be creative. And have fun, you know, at school, when typically school's not fun. I didn't think so.
You poor soul.
I wanted to jump and laugh and dance and sing, and I couldn't. I get in trouble.
Jumping and dancing was discouraged at your school?
Yeah.
That's too bad.
We had to sit there and be boring.
All I did was jump and dance and sing. That's all I do here as well.
You probably started off in public school. I was in parochial school. Public school, it's anything goes.
That's exactly how it is.
Yeah.
A humanoid robot is the newest member of the International Space Station's crew. The Space Shuttle Discovery delivered Robonaut, also known as R2, weeks ago, but astronauts just unpacked the new crew member on Tuesday. R2 is intended to begin serving as a helper to the astronauts aboard the space station in the coming decade. His initial testing begins in May, but for now he is simply attached to a pedestal waiting for his legs to arrive, which will be delivered to the International Space Station next year. Poor guy has no legs.
For a year.
For a year. He's just got to kind of hang out and say, look at me. But the topic of robots and artificial life was also recently mentioned by CBS News. Article pointed out that some scientists believe that artificial life is most likely what would come off a spaceship if one landed on Earth. A professor of computer science at UCLA recently said, if an extraterrestrial spaceship ever lands on Earth, I bet you that it's 99.999999% likely that what exits the ship will be synthetic in nature. We talked about that last week from that article, but a lot of talk about robots in space.
Yep.
And a lot of the arguments, you could say they make sense. You know, robots handle space better than we do, and with long distances to be traveled, robots can just be shut off and turned on when they actually get there 1,000 years later. And
you know what's funny? Here's a scenario I see: is we create
this
spaceship, we send it into space. It takes 1,000 years to get to Alpha Centauri. By the time it gets there, we'll have created some spaceship that can go through a wormhole where then humans are going, and so we'll go to Alpha Centauri 250 years after we launch the robots, and the robots won't get there till we've already colonized the area and made friends with the aliens, and it'll be a big joke. It'll 1,000 years later, the robots will show up and everybody, look at the robots.
It'll be pretty funny because they'll probably be programmed to get there and then report and send back a signal when they find something. Yeah. So they'll get there and go, human, and send the signal back.
And everybody else. But I think that the point being that I think it's only a small gap, small period of time that a civilization is not capable enough to have space flight where they're actually taking beings as opposed to robots. It's probably not like these guys think, you know, mostly robots out there.
Well, you could talk about it all day, but, you know, I don't know if the problem is our capability of being in space. There seems to be something else going on. We could easily, it seems, build a base on the moon and go from there. But we haven't done that yet.
Yeah, true.
There's something fishy going on.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. But robots for now seem to be what they're pushing. And clearly these people have not watched Terminator.
Well, if that makes them more open. And some of them are more open to the idea that UFOs are robots. So if that makes scientists feel more comfortable exploring the UFO arena, then so be it.
Whatever they need to do to convince themselves it's okay to look into it.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. But you know what? I have bad news.
Uh-oh.
You shouldn't worry about ever meeting an alien.
Really?
No extraterrestrials. You're not going to meet one.
I know what story you're talking about.
Oh, yeah. That was a story recently published on Time Magazine's website that took a very cynical view towards the search for extraterrestrial life. The piece was called Relax. You don't need to worry about meeting ET. And the story was filled with statements like, if exobiologists have learned anything, it's that you and your kids and their kids' kids will probably never hear the slightest peep from an alien. It was a very negative piece and sort of jumped to a lot of conclusions and kind of poo-pooed the whole thought of extraterrestrial life.
Well, that, and it's just so, I think that to me, and I don't know if maybe I'm just being naive or unscientific, it seems very barbaric science to assume, to make the types of assumptions they make in here, that even though the planet, the one planet we first discovered and knew had any knowledge about, which was our very own, is abundant with life, even though this planet has life that no others can have, that right sequence of mixture of stuff. They even admitted in this story that Mars probably had life at one point.
Right.
So, I mean, and that's the next closest planet.
Well, and they were
so,
sort of arguing with themselves, too, because
yeah.
They were bringing up the fact that even here on Earth, we continue to discover new life forms. We've discovered life that is able to survive in harsh environments, like inside volcanoes mm-hmm. and things like that.
Well, and then the concepts of that, the distances, there, other places are so far away, there's no way we'll ever be able to travel there. And here again, you know, I'm sure that's what people thought. It is what people thought about crossing the oceans or even being able to fly.
Right.
Oh, it's absolutely impossible. Well, buddy.
Hey, just because it may be impossible to us right now doesn't mean it will continue being that way. It doesn't mean it's that way for other life forms. It doesn't mean
wise.
That other life forms might have not, if they're not already here, doesn't mean other life forms didn't start their journey 999 years ago and will be coming here next year.
It would be an interesting psychological study to find out if, I would think that people who believe that so strongly and impossible and that certain things are impossible wouldn't make good theoretical scientists.
Hmm.
Because really, if you look at science, nothing's impossible. Everything has been able to be done that a lot of people have sought to do. Many, many, many things that many others have said it is impossible. Nothing, it seems unwise to think that anything is necessarily impossible. We just haven't figured it out yet.
Right. Alejandro, this is just an interesting story. It's not necessarily new news, but it's fascinating. At least I think it's fascinating. But the UK's Daily Mail recently ran a story about some of Saturn's strange moons. These small moons have puzzled scientists because of their odd shape, making them look more like flying saucers than moons. The Cassini spacecraft has captured images of Atlas and Pan, two of these moons. They were likely formed at the same time as Saturn's rings. Scientists think these oddly shaped moons were once spinning disks, and forces caused the edges of the structure to flatten out and a bulge to form towards the center. But the pictures of these things look really strange. They look just like flying saucers.
Yeah, they're some weird-looking moons.
Just crazy how many, you know, when you think about these other planets, just how many moons they have.
Yeah.
And then here, Earth, we've got our lonely little moon.
Compared to those moons, we got a pretty good-looking moon.
I like our moon a lot.
It's pretty cool.
Yeah. And, again, this is not new news. It's making headlines today for an update, but rock star Sammy Hagar admits he has been contacted by extraterrestrials on multiple occasions. This isn't breaking news, as he's discussed alien encounters in the past. However, the subject is currently making headlines resulting from an interview with Hagar conducted by MTVHive.com. The interview briefly explores the topic of UFOs after Hagar revealed that a passage about alien dreams in his new book, Red, My Uncensored Life in Rock, is based on a true encounter. While the mention of UFOs is brief in his new book, Hagar revealed in the interview, "My opinions about the UFO stuff, well, I could write a whole book just devoted to that. I love it, man. I'm into it deep."
Mm-hmm. Well, and they asked, I saw one angle of one of the stories was that they asked, you know, about his UFO dreams, and he was like, "No, those weren't dreams. That was real. That really happened. I talked to aliens." And
it caught the interviewer off guard.
Yeah.
"So what? I was just kidding. You're serious?"
Yeah. And he's like, "Yeah, dude, I talked to aliens, man." And of course, yeah, we've talked about this on the show before because we wrote a story on it. But he's not afraid to just say, "Oh, yeah, I talked to aliens." Just like him and Ilyumsinov.
Ilyumsinov, yeah.
They were in the news. Not ever afraid to say, yeah, sure, I met aliens.
And cool. he wanted to talk a lot more about it in this particular book, but the person he was writing the book with didn't say, "No, people will think you're crazy." He said, "No, man, people don't care about that stuff."
Yeah.
But a lot of people do.
Yeah.
And it's funny because he's getting a lot of press for his book off of this story.
Mm-hmm.
And the headlines haven't been talking about Sammy Hagar has a new book. Yeah. And saying Sammy Hagar believes in UFOs.
Well, that must be why that interviewer is in journalism as opposed to PR, because certainly people are interested in that stuff.
Absolutely.
And especially when it comes to a rock star, you know? And like he says, it's his inspiration comes from this.
Right.
So, yeah. I mean, people love Sammy Hagar, and they want to know what inspired him. If he says it's aliens, and, you know, I'm sure his fans are cool with that mostly.
He's certainly cool with it, and that's mm-hmm. pretty exciting.
Yeah. So,
back to our topic of space exploration. NASA recently tested a spacesuit that they hope will one day be used during missions to Mars. The NDX-1 spacesuit, designed by Argentine aerospace engineer Pablo de Leon, was tested for a week at an Argentine base in Antarctica. The location was chosen because of the varying environmental elements, and because Antarctica is one of the least contaminated places on Earth, making it perfect for sample collection. The $100,000 suit is made of more than 350 materials, including honeycomb Kevlar and carbon fibers.
$100,000?
$100,000.
That's cheap for NASA.
It's like an Armani suit.
Usually everything costs, you know, $1 million.
Yeah, $100,000 is chump change for them.
Mm-hmm. It's kind of exciting, too, because, you know, again, like we've been talking about how exciting, even with commercial spaceflight, that we're getting to that age of now we need to build a Mars suit because we're starting to get ready to go to Mars. I mean, they're talking about we'll be at possibly, you know, 2020. We'll be on Mars. So that is pretty cool. And the suit is straight out of, like, 1950s.
It looks like comic book stuff.
Sci-fi.
Oh, yeah.
Red with these tubes around it. And
a big, like, I don't know, like underwater helmet type thing.
Yeah. I mean, they'll probably make it cool and get some Italian designers to come in and give some advice on where to nip and tuck and make it look a little snazzier. But it looks
well, and I don't know. The guys who designed the suit said that if you're slightly claustrophobic, you're not going to like this suit because it makes you feel really closed in when you've got that helmet on.
Yeah.
It's very confining, and then you've got your intercom system all patched all over, so you feel kind of closed in.
Well, if this is version one, you know, they've got another 5 years or so to prepare, make it a little friendlier for the astronauts.
Well, hopefully they pick up the pace. I mean, 2020, that's that's not too far away, but
yeah,
they can do a little faster.
You know, this year I've been thinking a lot about how I used to think, wow, 2012, how old am I going to be? And, and how far away that is, and it's almost 2012 now, so. And the older you get, supposedly what I hear from the old guys is that time speeds up, so 7 years might just pass like this.
I was thinking that earlier this week, because when I initially read this story and I was thinking about 2020, why are they waiting so long? But that's not very far away.
Yeah. And it may be, you know, they'll be like, well, we've discovered there's life on Mars. There's some creatures up there. Will you guys come with us? Meaning, you know, me, you, maybe they'll bring Maureen to go. So you'll be the guys to communicate with the aliens because you guys know more about this stuff. And we'll get to have our own little Paul experience where we'll get out there and get a hang out with the aliens.
They didn't already ask you?
No.
I got my email.
Oh, man. No fair.
Sorry, bud. I guess that was secret.
But these are exciting times.
It's always exciting, Alejandro.
Think of the kids. I mean, think of being a 10-year-old kid right now, wherein by the time you're 20, we're going to Mars.
I'm thinking about myself when I'm 50. Screw the kids. It's exciting.
Yeah.
I'll be a kid glued to my window and going out bouncing around in my spacesuit.
Yeah, woo.
Oh, yeah. I'm ready. Awesome. Well, that is it for the news, Alejandro. Be sure to check out these stories and more at openminds.tv, your source for UFO-related news. I'm Jason McClellan, your UFO correspondent, and you've been briefed. Back to you, Mr. Alejandro.
Thank you, Jason. Another job well done. And now you guys are all briefed on the news, and you're up to speed on the latest and the greatest, so you can go to the water cooler tomorrow and be Mr. Cool Guy. Hey, you guys hear about the latest on the UFOs? Pretty cool stuff. And then everybody's going to think you're the best, especially the Sammy Hagar fans, because there's a lot of them. Go to the water cooler and say, hey, you guys like to rock? You guys like some Sammy Hagar? Well, he was inspired by aliens. I don't know why you have to use this kind of weird accent I'm using, but it'll be a lot of fun to go to work and do that. I want to tell you about a couple other stories that we have on the website. This is really cool, and it makes me proud to work with the colleagues that I do. With the Wendell Stevens archives that we acquired, of course, Wendell Stevens being a pilot in the Air Force who has been in the UFO business for decades since the beginning, he put in some Blue Book sightings when he was in the Air Force. And so he's collected a lot of stuff. One of the things that he's collected are the APRO bulletins. And this is the Aerial Phenomena Research Organization. It was created here in Arizona. And it was one of the largest organizations early on and made up of scientists for the most part and devoted researchers. NICAP and some of these other more conservative organizations, which were largely made up of military people, really were into the nuts and bolts. And APRO was the first organization that actually opened up their purview to alien abduction or alien encounters or contactees and this sort of thing. And they were mostly, you know, they did have some pretty impressive people as part of their organization. And they had some very impressive bulletins, their journals that they would put out on a regular basis. Well, luckily, Wendell Stevens had most of those in his collection here. So what we've done is scanned those and put those online. We have somewhere about from 1955 to 1970, not all of them, but most of them. And then we have some from 1970 to 1980 that we're going to be putting up here soon, too, as we scan them. Jason actually has done most of the scanning and created the page to make it look really nice. So he's done a good job there. Antonio wrote this story so you can understand what the APRO bulletins were and the background and the history behind that. And that is all up on our website. You can go to the Resources tab and find UFO files, and you'll be able to find those there. The Rockefeller document we've talked about is there also, and also the Colonel Corso document is there for people to look at. So this is really exciting because these bulletins are pretty incredible. They've been invaluable for us for our research for the magazine and other stories that we write because a lot of the original investigative work on some of the most important cases over the last few decades you can find in these documents, such as the Travis Walton case or some other famous crash cases or landing cases. And it's very well researched and investigated. So it's very exciting. I'm very excited that we do have these up here. I know if I was just if I wasn't associated with Open Minds and you know, an independent investigator or with MUFON like I was before, I would be very excited that I'd be able to have access to these APRO bulletins. I was very excited when I found they were here, and it's great to go through them. So I implore you to go check those out because you're going to be fascinated by what you read there and very impressed by the diligent work done by these investigators in the past in these APRO bulletins. So it's very cool. We're going to get more up there soon. Also, we do have a UFO case files revealed. That is number 12 that's up. Michael Stratt, of course, has gone through different eyewitness UFO accounts and then taken what the person saw and made a 3D rendering and then put that in a background similar to where the person had seen it. So you can get a good idea, an illustration on what that person might have seen. So we've got another one of those stories up too. So check it out. Always check out our website because we're putting new stuff up there all the time, and it is a treasure trove for people who are looking for information. There's one guy out there too looking for information, and he works so hard at it, and he's gotten so much attention for it lately that he got fired over it. And that is my good buddy, Chuck Zukowski. Chuck, are you there?
Alejandro, am I here?
It sounds like it.
I guess I'm here then.
All right, how are you doing?
I'm the guy.
Good,
hey,
good.
Hello to everybody listening to this fabulous radio show.
So you saw Paul yesterday too?
I did see Paul yesterday. I did.
That was a funny movie.
I would get any visuals from it, but yeah, I would recommend just for a lighthearted movie, go out and check it out. And what's really interesting about this, Alejandro, was they showed some of my old stomping grounds. Like a few years ago when I still lived in California, I hired a guide and met her at the Little Alien Inn at Rachel, Nevada, and we hiked the top of Pickle Peak where I could observe, areas that you run off in the distance. And so, the movie kind of shows the Wailing Inn and shows the Rachel area and the extraterrestrial highway and the black mailboxes are not painted black. And it was really kind of cool, that you got a couple of supposedly geeks that are traveling looking at all this stuff. I'm like, I'm kind of hiding my eyes going, I'm one of those geeks.
I'm not afraid to be one of those geeks because really, they didn't have a lot of UFO stuff in it like you're talking about. They had that the Rachel in and stuff, but it's really kind of a sci-fi geek fest, which I know you're a bit of a sci-fi geek too because I've been to sci-fi conferences with you.
Oh, yeah. Matter of fact, the movie started off at Comic-Con in San Diego. When I lived in California, I used to volunteer working security at Comic-Con, so it was a lot of fun.
Oh, really? I didn't know that.
Well, there you go.
How cool.
Something else about me.
And that thing has gotten so ridiculously popular that, all the movie releases are at Comic-Con. I mean, it's like one of the biggest conferences in the world now.
Oh, absolutely. I don't know if you ever saw the movie Buckaroo Banzai. It was
yeah.
My old favorite. Right now, I have an alien head in my office. Well, I have one of many alien heads. And he's wearing a Team Banzai headband. That I picked up at Comic-Con.
Cool.
When they were introducing the movie Yarns Ago. So,
that's
funny. I still have artifacts, or I shouldn't say artifacts. I guess they would be artifacts now because they're that old.
Yeah. They probably do have to be dusted off.
Yeah. Along with some of the people that show up there too, I guess.
Yeah. So I guess just to start, I had mentioned a lot about, or I had mentioned something about how you've been getting a lot of attention in the media lately, and it seems like that's kind of what led up to the Sheriff Department's decision here. But even though your website is UFONut.com and obviously you're a jovial person, the media attention you've got has been pretty serious. It seems like most of the stories I've read where they've covered, you know, your cow mutilation investigations or some of the other investigations you've done, they've treated you pretty well and taken your work seriously.
Oh, absolutely. And that's really kind of cool about it. And, you know, at first when they talk to me, they go, well, you got a website called UFO Nut. And I have to explain to them that, you know, the whole basis of the name UFO Nut comes back in the day when, you know, I first started doing this, and people would, you know, they would contradict what I was doing and calling me a nut. And so I decided instead of getting frustrated with, you know, that tag, I went ahead and, you know, put it on my license plate, and then very shortly thereafter, you know, built a website, UFONut.com. And I kind of have fun with it now. And basically, also, it's an acronym, UFONut, Unconventional Flying Objects, Non-Human and Identifiable Technology. So it actually means something, too. Imagine that.
Did it start off as an acronym, or did you make that up later?
I don't make anything up, you know that. No, I'm creative.
Yeah.
When I first, what happened was the UFO Nut started to get so much attention that just one night I just looked at them, you know what, that looks like it could mean this, and then I just kind of came up with that. And really, in reality, it kind of does touch on what UFO Nut really means, you know, non-human identifiable technologies, if you look at the UFO standpoint. Now, as for the animal mutilations, matter of fact, this is a press release. It was Open Minds that got me fired. No, I'm just kidding. It wasn't really Open Minds. Yeah, I mean, right on the letter it said Alejandro, but I blocked that part out, so I didn't want to get you in trouble.
Oh, thank you.
What happened was exactly what you said. You know, the last few years it's been real serious. I've been getting a lot of serious coverage. The people visiting the website, very, very, very intelligent comments. I'm so happy with the amount of people visiting the website and then emailing me. And shout out to Matt Morgan and Trina Bivens, who helped me redesign the website to make it, a little more, acceptable.
Cooler?
It's okay. You can say cooler. Oh, wait. Priscilla's listening. Hi, Priscilla.
Oh, hello.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Matt and Trina.
I just talked to Priscilla the other day.
Okay. Hi, Priscilla. I know her, too.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
Matt and Trina have done an incredible job with the website. I think it looks so cool, and they've made some really neat videos for you lately.
Yeah, I heard that while they were over at the UFO Congress, you were going to try and steal them from me and have them do something for you. What's up with that?
Yeah, well, you weren't there. You weren't there, so
yeah.
That was my chance.
Yeah. Unfortunately, I know I missed a phenomenal conference, and I tell you what, on my iPhone at work, I was kind of keeping up with the updates that people were posting on it. And then watching the Christopher O'Brien videos that he was putting out on YouTube. So, no, it's not like being there, not even close. And I'm really sad that I kind of missed that one. And I apologize to you for.
Oh, no, hey. Yeah, you had other things to do, but I know.
Well, I had to wash my hair that weekend.
Yeah. Because you've got this long, lustrous hair.
That's right.
So, and what's kind of interesting is that we did have Chris O'Brien, who is a researcher back kind of from our neck of the woods back in Colorado, because he was one of the original researchers of the San Luis Valley, which is where, or near, in some cases, where these mutilations were occurring that you have been investigating.
Oh, absolutely. Now, San Luis Valley is a very sacred area, has been, you know, years before, Europeans migrated to this part of North America, I should say, or even this part of the world. you know, the Native Americans have been going there for hundreds of years. You know, I just talked to Priscilla Wolf about it over the weekend, and it's just amazing the history of that area and what's been going on and why the Native Americans ventured to that area. It's almost like second to Chaco Canyon, although it doesn't have, you know, the structures that Chaco Canyon has. There are unique areas within the San Luis Valley that attracted the Native Americans from the Four Corners region to go there and to, you know, basically for spiritual gathering.
Mm-hmm. Priscilla Wolf, cool. I can't remember, is she in New Mexico or is she in the valley? She's in New Mexico.
Right? Yeah, she's just inside of Albuquerque.
Okay, that's what I thought. Yeah, I can't remember if she lived in the valley or not for a minute there.
No, but she's very, you know, very knowledgeable of that whole area. And, you know, she's one of my, BFs that, you know, that I contact when I have a question about, Native American presence in that area. And then also, on my website, I reposted the Roswell Rock Circle. You remember that when we went out to the site where Robert Ridge had found the rock, I was a little concerned about, you know, a Native American presence in that area because of some of the artifacts were being found. So we put Priscilla Wolf out there to make sure that we weren't doing anything that would be disrespectful to the Native Americans. So, you know, there's certain things as an investigator you have to think about when, you know, you're going into an area where artifacts are being taken out. First off, obviously, you know, BLM, you know, issues, you know, whether or not it's, it's a property of New Mexico. And then the other issues, basically, is it the property of a Native American tribe that, you know, they reside or, you know, resided, I guess, or resided in that area, you know, years and years ago. So, it's, you know, anyway, you have to think about all the different areas that you need to cover. And then also, you have to think about the areas, too, that will help you make it skeptic-proof and debunk-proof when you're doing any type of investigation. So, anyhow.
Yep. Now, we'll talk about the Roswell Rock Circle a little more in a minute, see if you have some updates. But I wanted to get back to the mutilations and get back to there was a particular case that the sheriff's department referred to, where they said you disagreed with their results, and that was a recent horse mutilation. Is that correct?
Yeah, absolutely. That was the Rush horse mutilation that occurred on August. The horses were found on August 11th of last year.
Yeah. So can you fill us in on this case?
Oh, sure. Well, basically, two horses were found mutilated in August. And then there was actually two surviving animals, one horse and one dog, that were found with unknown marks on their body. Not just random marks, but marks that, you know, interesting enough, like, you know, a mark inside each one of the legs and a very distinctive mark on the nose of the horse. I mean, something that you couldn't just say, well, you know, that was a scar. I mean, these are marks, especially with the horse, that was so obvious that the rancher was there. That wasn't there yesterday, type of thing. And then the other thing interesting about this was 2 days before, one of the ranchers or the rancher's wife heard a pushing sound, almost like helicopter blades, in the daytime, in the afternoon. And she looked up, and you live out here in Colorado. If anybody else, you know, who hasn't been out here in Colorado, one thing about Colorado is it'll have about 340 days of clear skies. You know, we get a few days of thunder, but I mean, everything kind of clears up nice, and you can pretty much guarantee you're going to have at least 300 days of nice, not nice weather, but clear skies out here. And so the skies were clear in the August time frame, when she was looking up and couldn't see any helicopters. Interesting thing about different types of mutilations we can touch on a little bit later is the rancher's perception on who done it. But the bottom line on this particular case was, you know, the mutilation occurred. It made the local media. I shot down there and was able to see the animals still while they were there, and took my team out there with me, Matt and Trina, and and we put together, or actually I should say they put together a real nice video on the website about it. But, it was picked up by the media and it went everywhere. I mean, I was getting emails from, England, Dominican Republic, Canada, all over the place. And so Fox News in Denver wanted to do a story on it and talked to the rancher's wife, Glenda, and said they wanted to come down and interview her. And so she contacted me, and she said, I've never done this before. Can you come down and meet with me and be there with me when this, Heidi, the reporter for Denver Fox, comes down and interviews me? I said, yeah, sure, of course I will. So I took time off of work, and I went down there. And she decided to interview me, too. And she basically said, law enforcement in general, there's issues. How come these cases haven't been solved since, 1967 out here in Colorado? And my response was, law enforcement in general, basically, isn't prepared or isn't experienced enough to do these types of investigations. Now, I've been in law enforcement for 8 years, and I know that there's certain deputies that take classes on cases where animals have been killed, so they can tell whether or not the animal was killed by humans or naturalists, right?
Is this training focused more on looking for foul play? I mean, they're not looking for unknown phenomena.
Exactly.
They're just looking,
Exactly. And I kind of know a little bit of the inside. I talked to the deputies who actually have taken these classes.
Mm-hmm.
And basically, they're just looking for any type of human intervention that surrounds an unknown or a surprise death of an animal. And then they do that, it's basically cruelty to animals or something similar to that, which makes it a criminal act. And so I said, this was not a, from my experience and from what I've, researched and read in the past, the evidence that I saw and the evidence that I didn't see pretty much pointed towards an unknown predator or basically a mutilation case. And the reporter from Fox News, after she interviewed me, she went and talked to the PR person for the Sheriff's Department, and the PR person said that it was a predator, not a known predator, but it was just a predator and kind of a common occurrence. And I didn't know that at the time, but when it aired, I basically contradicted the Sheriff's Department, although I never contradicted them by name.
Mm-hmm.
I just said, enforcement general. I'm not that stupid. I'm not going to say, Pasco County Sheriff's Department is absolutely wrong
right.
on what they said, because I didn't even know that she was going to go over there and interview them. I just said, law enforcement in general. You know that. You've been with me on some investigations. We basically don't accuse people individually or point fingers or anything like that. We try to keep it as general as we can. Just because, just the type of investigation it is.
Well, and I think a good point you made was that the owner of the animals was not satisfied with that response, which is why she was still looking into other alternatives.
Well, absolutely. That's the whole purpose behind investigators like us going out on these things. Is, you have law enforcement come in, and law enforcement is basically telling a rancher who's been ranching all their lives that, oh, by the way, they don't know what they're talking about when it comes to the death of their animal. And it's really kind of sad too, because if a rancher, like let's say Daniel Sanchez, who lost four calves within three and a half week period, he's a third generation cattle rancher. He still lives in the house he was born in, okay? So his father ranched, his grandfather ranched. This guy knows his animals. And when you have ranchers like that that say, I don't know what killed my animal. And then when they don't, when they're not satisfied with local law enforcement assessing hypothesis of what's other animal, then obviously they have to seek out. And what we do is we seek out people like us.
Mm-hmm.
And then we go in there, and based on previous research and other, you know, investigations that we've done, we kind of look for the proverbial evidence that it can't be found. And that's exactly what we're looking for. Granted, you know, the Crystal Ryans and the Lindbom, and how they've done more than their share of you know, mutilation investigations, and I applaud them for it, and they've really, you know, etched, you know, in stone a direction that we can all go into. And they have some really good evidence, but they better track the case. And the reason for that is there's that evidence in there that's going to directly link to something that we'll be able to find. And so when an investigator like me, when I go in there, I'm looking, you know, not only out of the box, but I'm looking, I hate to say it, but off the planet, not saying that it's alien-oriented, but I'm saying you got to look really, really far out. You really got to look for something that you don't know what you're looking for, but you'll know when you find it. You know?
Yeah, kind of, and in other words, keeping an open mind or looking at all the possibilities. But like you said, you know, no one's come up with the answer, which is what these ranchers are looking for. When you talk to a rancher's not, I haven't found stubborn that, no, this has got to be alien. No, they want to know what it is so they could either kill it or get them in the cops to, if it's a human, to get them to stop doing it. I mean, if it's an animal, they want to know what animal and what kind of animal, because I'm going to keep this animal from killing my animals, even if I got to kill it, or if it's a human, I want them thrown in jail or I want to be compensated.
Absolutely. And there's always a fear of that unknown, of an unknown predator. Now, for someone to come out, and I'm not going to point fingers at, you know, at the Sheriff's Department or any other law enforcement agency that, you know, with their assessments on what happened. But basically, if someone comes out and says, I just want to use the bait someone, comes out and says, well, a mountain lion killed it. And then yet, you know, people like you and me, we just don't interview the ranchers. We also interview the neighbors. We talk to people around there. Have you seen any mountain lions? I've never seen a mountain lion in this area. Does that mean that one can't show up? Well, of course. There's maybe signs of a mountain lion, the predator, and there's going to be a scuffle. There's going to be marks. There's going to be all kinds of evidence that a big predator. And we also, you know, have taken down the animal. There's also the experience of the ranchers. I mean, can a mountain lion take down a 1,000-pound horse, you know, 1,100-pound cow? Well, I guess they could. Have you ever seen that in the past in the area? Well, no. Never seen that. We know all the other ranchers in the area. You know,
is unique in the research that you've done in these mutilations recently is you've gotten a lot of kind of expert help, or you have outreach to other law enforcement in some cases and other agencies who have, such as the Colorado, the cattle
the
guy.
Oh, that was right. All the cattle. Oh, right. The brand inspector.
The brand inspector, right. But I mean, these other experts like the brand inspector and some other authorities, I think in some of those cases you even had police officers who were like, wow, I don't know either, let alone an abundance of many ranchers from the area saying, wow, I don't know what that was.
Well, and there is a disconnect. The disconnect is generally law enforcement at the site, and these guys are very intelligent, and when they see something that they can't understand, they may or may not write it in, you know, write it in their supplement or write it on the case report or something. They kind of keep it to themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, very rarely will you ever see a law enforcement agency come out and say, oh, we don't know what it was. And we need some help with some UFO guy, you know, down the street to help us figure this out. So they never want to drop their, you know, their shorter hand, you know, basically. And that's because, you know, I mean, obviously law enforcement has to keep this, you know, persona. Of being able to be in control, even though, I mean, our Air Force has been saying for the past, since 47, that they've been in complete control of the air side or the sky, but we obviously all know differently. But yet, they'll tell us every day that they're in complete control,
mm-hmm.
i.e. same thing with law enforcement. But when we start talking to police officers, and I've talked to a few, obviously, you know, off duty and plainclothes on these investigations, including deputies too, told me their own personal stories of seeing things and having encounters that they would never tell anybody else, just because of the ridicule factor, the giggle factor. But when an official statement comes out from law enforcement, you wouldn't really expect anything less than, you know, they just tag it. And the reason for that is they don't really have the experience or the knowledge to venture outside, the course that they've been taught. And law enforcement is very restrictive in the policies and procedures it follows, and you will not, you know, sway away from what we taught you. If you do, you're on your own, basically, and that happens all the time where, you know, if someone violates a policy of law enforcement, you know, the law enforcement will not stand up for them. They have to get their own, you know, attorney. I mean, you see this and you read this all the time.
Yeah.
So then it is, so basically, the PR person for the law enforcement would adhere to. Now, we do know at this point that we're re-looking at this particular case with the Pasco County Sheriff's Department. And there, I can't tell you at this time, but if this comes out, it almost looks like they contradicted themselves, and I agree with them. But we're sort of venturing into that right now, and we'll see whether or not this pans out. And in fact, that is the case. And if it is, I'll come back on your show and share this with everybody.
Yeah, that would be kind of cool if they come out and say, we were wrong and you were right. It'd be like a TV show, like a comic book TV show or something, and they give you the key to the city and a ticker tick parade because you figured
out. I don't think there'd be any, I don't think it'd ever be something like that. I don't think they would ever say that they were wrong and, you know, I was right. What I would expect, you know, them to say is, oh, we either misunderstood or we didn't get everything tax right or blah, 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 blah. You know, there's very rarely will you ever get law enforcement saying, you know, we screwed up. You know, it generally doesn't happen. But anyway, there's always the first time.
Yeah, I'm going to write them a letter and say, hey, you guys need to admit you're wrong and have a parade for check.
Hey, there you go. Right
down.
Hey,
that parade.
The UFO. Hey, there you go. I mean, we could put a date in history to do it, but not Roswell, because I'll probably be down there.
Yeah.
Not in Colorado at the time. So basically, just because of this disagreement with, that came out with the Fox News, they started looking into it. They claim that it violated one of their policies, even though we haven't found a policy directly that said that violated. And then also, like you said, with the media, because stuff on my website, because, it's put together so well and there's so much information in there now, and we even point those in mind also, that the media is coming in and they're picking some stuff out of it. And when they read an article on something they see on my website, they go into my bio, and my bio for a couple of years had said that I was a reserve deputy because I was proud of it. And so they would just block that in their article, even though it also says, you know, I'm an IT map design engineer, been doing that for 25 years, and I have my education on there in college and all that. So they never thought of it that, they always put the reserve deputy stuff on it.
Mm-hmm.
So that was another part of the termination letter, was the fact that media would refer to me as reserve, even though they never referred to me as actually doing the investigation, portraying a deputy or representing it. It's just that was just part of my title or just part of me.
Right.
You know, and hell, you know, I think down there too said I was a Hollywood writer, but they never mentioned that either. So that was pretty much the bottom line. Now, I will tell you this. It's something that I haven't told anybody before, but I'll tell you guys. A couple of years before, back in, a couple of years before, maybe about 2008 or so. I know it's 11, but we're just into 11. So, you know, I got called in to the officer, had to go downtown, and the commander brought me in along with my lieutenant and said, we're real concerned about you doing UFO investigations, and we're real concerned about you having that on your website, on your bio, that you're reserve deputy. I said, okay, and? And the commander said, well, I want you to remove it. And I said, you want me to remove it? Or am I violating a policy? Or am I, or does the sheriff's department want me to remove it? Tell me. I said, now, if one person in this department has a problem with me being a UFO paranormal investigator, you know, too bad. That's, you know, but if it's a policy I'm violating, or if I get a letter from the department stating that I have to remove this from my website, I'll be more than happy to. But I'm not going to do it because I have one or two people out here that disagree with what I'm doing. And we do have that issue. I mean, there's all kinds of, people's backgrounds, how they were brought up, you know, religious. I'm not gonna point fingers at people that, you know, that are religious, obviously, but there are people I have come across with, you know, the 4,000-year, Earth theory and some other things where, you know, it's really hard to communicate with them. But I'm not saying that was the case, but if there's one individual trying to intimidate me to take it off my website, basically I was just saying, I'm proud of it. You know, it's part of me. But if the sheriff's department wants me to remove it, I will be more than happy to remove it. Just write it down on paper, give it to me, and I'll remove it that night. And that was the end of that. I never heard about it before, or since then.
Right.
So after that, now there's some rumors going around, in the reserve area that say, well, he was ordered to take it off. No. I wasn't ordered to take it off. I wasn't ordered to remove it from my file.
And even
I have one person that disagreed.
Yeah, and even if that was the case, that you were, I mean, it doesn't seem right to order you to do that. That doesn't have anything to do with what they're doing. Like you said, you're not portraying yourself as these are official El Paso County investigations, but it's part of who you are, is that you're a reserve deputy officer. And the scary part of that is really it implies then that no, or at least what their feeling is, that nobody working for them should do paranormal investigations. And that doesn't seem right that they should be able to dictate that. And it's kind of scary because a lot of UFO investigators are police officers that are still police officers. Some of them are outward, like Ken Storch. We know Ken Storch, is a Aurora police officer. And he's not afraid to talk about being a police officer and a UFO investigator. And his cop buddies kind of tease him about it and stuff like that. But still, people who are law enforcement obviously have a set of skills and training they can bring to this investigation that's very helpful. And to try to say that because we're afraid of the association that these people shouldn't be doing that, I mean, that's pretty bad. I think that's pretty infringing on people's rights.
Well, matter of fact, during this conversation with said commander, I did mention Ken Storch, and basically said, there are, officers out there. And that's basically said, if it's one person's opinion, I'm not going to do this. But if it's the opinion of the department, I will absolutely take it off. And you know me, Alejandro, you know me for a few years that, I don't push too easy when someone comes to me and tries to, intimidate me. I push back. And that's one of my faults, I guess. Sometimes people call it a pillow, some people call it a con. But I think that's where you have to have a personality where, if you're not willing to push, you're not going to get meaningful information.
You got to be a little stubborn.
You have to be a little stubborn, and you have to be, a little straightforward sometimes, too. I mean, if you want to tackle certain types of investigations, you have to have that A-type personality where you're not afraid to go into a dark alley to figure out what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what we are. Now, you've been on at least two major investigations with me, and at any time, was I wearing a badge? Did I have a sheriff's shirt on? Was I representing the department?
Always have your UFO nut T-shirts on.
With my badge. No, I never had my badge on it. But yeah, so I mean, I was telling him, listen, you know, you can you'll never find anywhere on any website anywhere a picture of me in uniform or a badge, wearing a badge or a shirt that says Sheriff's Department on it, doing an investigation, the Colonel or UFO Academy relation with us. You'll never, because it's not out there. You just can't find it. Well, I guess it's someone superimposed one in Photoshop or something, but, you know, there's not one out there of me because I've never done it. The issue is like you said, there are certain people that, for whatever purpose or for whatever reason, and I'll tell you what, that, and as bad as that sounds, that's still not as bad as some of the comments I'm getting from people saying, well, and it's sad that I get these comments because I really don't think it's that way, but a lot of people think that way, that, you know, the conspiracy thing. This is another way of law enforcement, you know, keeping this quiet and not getting it released. Because the bottom line, and you read my termination letter, it's on the website, basically it said, okay, you know, they don't even want me to investigate anything in El Paso County, which is 2,200 square miles, that they're investigating. And there's a real fine line with that. Mm-hmm. And you expect, okay, if they're doing this investigation on cattle mutilation, then I can't touch it. When you call 911 and an officer arrives on scene, and if dispatch, you know, gives him a case report and he writes it down, and the case report has been created on that 911 call, that's an investigation.
Right. So which happens a lot with UFO research. I mean,
well, that's just it. Every officer, or at least deputy that I know, and I've been doing it 8 years, you go to a 911 call, and if you have to look further into it, a case number is assigned to it. As soon as there's a case number, that's considered an investigation. So figure 90% of all 911 calls, that's good in touch, which is ludicrous. I think, yeah, there's no way.
Right.
It's not very devalued. You crazy?
Yeah.
And, you know, in a 2,200 square mile, I go, that's just ludicrous.
Yeah. Another part about this is it's not so bad for you because funny thing is, which makes it worse on their part, is that this isn't your main job. You're an electrical engineer. You design microchips. That's where you make your money. So this is kind of something you do as a volunteer to help out, to help the police, the sheriff's department when they're busy. So because they're understaffed a lot of times. So you're helping them. And then they don't want to take your help anymore because of your UFO investigations. But at least you can be stubborn. For the poor guy out there who makes his living being a deputy, that person can't just say, you know, no thanks. He's got to say, okay, I'm stopping investigating and I'm just going to do what my bosses say. I mean, unless they want to lose their job.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. So, you can get cocky. And I have been in those type of situations because I know, matter of fact, if I used to take my badge today, I'm still going to get paid this week.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and you're absolutely right because there are people involved in law enforcement that can't do that because not only will they not get, you know, their pay, that they'll lose their pension too and everything else. I mean, there's a lot riding on it. So there's so what happens a lot of times is. Some law enforcement agencies, if they manage by intimidation, you'll see this revolving door in front of their department where you'll see a lot of deputies coming in and out or a lot of police officers, city officers coming in and out. And you can generally pick that. You know, all you have to do is look at your local law enforcement and kind of see into the yield of how many officers or how many deputies going in and out of that place. Or if they're not, then you know that, okay, the management style is a little different. It's like any other company, too. You know,
mm-hmm.
If a company wants to keep their employees, obviously they're going to manage them a little bit differently than a company that can care less, and, you know, fine, you know, you do as I say, or there's the door. Those are the ones where the door is a revolving door, and all you
right.
see is going out and new employees coming in. And anybody can pick those type of stores, and all you have to do is just look at the statistics at your local law enforcement agency and see how many officers or deputies have been leaving that particular, you know, place in the past year or 2 years. And if you're not seeing any, then you kind of know, oh, you know, that law enforcement agency in my town, that's pretty cool. Obviously, you know, they're not managing by, you know, management by intimidation. They're doing things a little bit differently. It's just something you have to look at. Now, I'm not saying that's the case with this guy, but That could be the case. Or the fact that, you know, they just have a problem with a UFO nut wearing the badge. And that could be the case, too.
Well,
everybody knows that, yeah.
I was going to say, if I was the sheriff, I'd be proud to have a UFO nut on my team.
Well, you know, I actually...
that's how sheriffs sound.
Yeah, that's what
they all sound like that. I'm the sheriff in these parts, and I'm proud to have a UFO nut as a deputy. Tell you what.
Here's a little tidbit for you guys out there. There's only one person that can fire the sheriff, and the sheriff is in an elected position. What person do you think could fire the sheriff?
The city manager.
The coroner.
The coroner? In Phoenix, coroner. It's the city manager. We had a sheriff fired. I think it was the sheriff. That's weird. What are you talking about?
Well, back in the old days, the coroner, the doctor usually were the same guy just because he was the guy with all the education.
Huh.
And I'm not saying that sheriffs now don't have education. Back in the Western days, you know, the one person in the town that had a formal education was generally the doctor who also was the coroner. So, you know.
The one guy in town who's smoking a pipe instead of chewing tobacco?
That's it. So when they needed to get rid of the sheriff, they would go to the one person who had all the education, you know, and that would be the doctor or the coroner.
Hmm.
And so they gave him the task and the, you know, ability to be able to remove the sheriff. And I think, believe it or not, here in Colorado, I think that's still the case.
This isn't one of your jokes? This is the honest-to-goodness truth, huh?
This is a little bit from UFO nut to you. Out of 8 years, you can learn something.
So, you've gotten a bit of media coverage over this situation, and some of the local media has been very supportive of you, right? And then very critical of the sheriff's department's decision.
And one of the reasons why, and it's pretty simple. So NBC here, Andy Cohen. I took NBC Andy Cohen out to the Sanchez mutilation. We were together the whole day. You know, because it's, you know, I'm going to call our face over San Luis Valley, San Luis, a good 3 hours away. So, you know, it's a whole day thing to do these investigations, you know, 2.5-3 hours down there and another 2-3 hours doing the investigation. So, you know, we're just not talking a walk in the park and you're down here, you're back by noon.
Right.
You know, we're talking a full day. And you've rolled on one of these, so you know that, especially coming out of Denver and going to the other side of the state of Colorado.
I had to get up even earlier to get out and meet you and then head out there.
That's right.
Uh-oh. Hello?
Hello? Are you there?
Yeah, you were kind of electric.
Yeah, well, that happens to me every now and then. Sometimes, I get suppressed. But I have an override system that Matt put in for me on the website so I can override all these blocking frequencies that the local government's putting in.
Matt's impressive. He's created a pretty impressive website, but I don't think he could do that.
So bottom line is, where are they going with this?
You were talking about how the media has been helpful, that you spent the day with the NBC guy.
And so what happened was, I posted the termination on my website. I really didn't, other than I told you about it, I really didn't, put it out to the press release or anything. And every now and then I get hit with the local media, and Andy, saw it and called me on it. And he said, I'll tell you what, I never knew you were a deputy until the plane crash out here, about 40, 50 miles away from Colorado Springs. And I worked the 11-hour detail there, all the kids, he was there, the FAA, and when they're trying to do an investigation on a plane crash. And he rolled in later on to do a report on it in the uniform. And he goes, you're tough.
Oh, wow. So you had spent the day doing this investigation with him, or taking it out on an investigation, and he never knew that whole day that you were a reserve deputy.
Never knew. He kind of saw me in uniform. And so here was a person who goes, well, this is bullshit. I never knew you were until I actually saw you in uniform. I'm going, and walked up to me. So he knew me from his point of view. He said, well, for God's sake, if you're going to tell anybody, you take telemedia, please. Just someone that would hang with you the whole day doing a, you know, a sound relations investigation. So he kind of thought that the whole thing was bogus anyway. But he decided, it was based on that, he decided that he was going to do a story on it. And he brought me up to the, you know, to the studio. I went to the ABC studio here in Colorado Springs, and we went ahead and did the interview. Now, it's interesting for your listeners, if you, whatever, it doesn't matter what search engine you like, but if you search Deputy Fired UFO, it's all over the place. It really is. And if you add my last name to it, then you can actually get a little bit better, you know, connection to the website that I've been talking about. And so far, I've got a lot of, I think on maybe 6% of the time is very, very positive. You're always going to get some negative, and that's okay. Matter of fact, we have a comment section on the website, and we do allow negative comments to be posted. What we don't allow is when people start, you know, slandering other people by name or other people, other commenters slandering them or using foul language, because we just, you know, next, but, you know, intelligent comments. And then also tell the negative comments, you know, it's welcomed on our website, and we leave it there. But most, well over 95%, 96%, I've seen have all been really positive. A couple of negatives are, and you've met these guys, Alejandro, you know, of course they terminate you. Why are you looking for UFOs? You know there's no such thing, you know. Mm-hmm. Or, and it doesn't matter. Those guys, you know, the commander can. And it's not really our job to convince, because our job is just to put the information out there and let people, you know, see for themselves and make their, you know, their own decisions based on the information we put out. But some people are at the point where I had one guy that he got as far as four lines or five lines on the blog and slammed me on that. And he never finished reading the blog, because what he commented on, all he had to do was read a little further, and it would have contradicted exactly what he said, but he didn't even bother doing it.
That's one of the things that happens a lot. Often there are people who will make comments before they even read the story. They read the headline and then they make comments, or maybe they'll read a couple sentences and then they make comments, and they sound silly because they haven't read the story. And unfortunately, some journalists do that. Reminds me of what Steve Oberg, he writes for MSNBC, and he wrote about Leslie Kane's recent book about UFOs, you know, pilots and generals go on the record. And he didn't read the book. He started criticizing these cases that aren't even in the book.
Well, I don't know the guys that will criticize based on the forward. You know, I'll just read the forward. And then you kind of read what they're saying, and you read the forward, and you're like, oh, gosh, that's all they read.
Right, yeah.
I'm going to criticize the person who's endorsed it. Forget about the book. You know, oh, my gosh, I can't believe that so-and-so endorsed it. Are you kidding me? But there's people out there, and that's okay. I don't, you know, we deal with them, and I know you deal with them also.
Mm-hmm.
And best you can do is just, I guess, if you put the information out, just like you guys do on your website, and, you know, with your radio shows and at the Congress, you put the information out there, and you allow the people, you know, who visit the website or the conferences, listen to the radio show, let them make the decision.
Yeah.
And then if they're interested in it, like I was years and years ago, they may want to pursue it. You know, I was sitting in an audience going, gosh, that would be cool to do that. I could do that. And that's
right.
How it all started.
Yeah.
You know? And it was based on, I can't remember who it was that I was listening to, but obviously that person was energetic enough about what they were doing that they gave me the motivation to look at it, you know, and go, wow, that's cool. I'd love to do that. And that's what's exciting about this, especially when I get some emails coming in going, wow, how can I help? What can I do over here? I'm going, oh, I love those emails.
Yeah.
You know, because there's some excitement in there. And when people talk about disclosure, and it's going to happen. And I know that the government's not going to be responsible for disclosure. We're going to be responsible for disclosure. You, me, the people out there listening to this show, reading your website, reading your magazine, they're the ones that are going to cause the tsunami wave that's going to create disclosure. what's going to happen if the government comes out and says, okay, there's going to be this coalition, it's only because of what we're doing.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to push them to do it. So don't be sitting around waiting for somebody in Washington to make a decision, okay, it's time for disclosure, I'll have a lawsuit, please. No, you know, it's up to us to push them to do it.
Yeah.
So we get the information out there, and the people make the decision on their own, and, you know.
Yeah, once I feel the same way. I mean, once it's a foregone conclusion to the general public, then it's silly. It makes it to a point where it's silly not to then accept it for the, especially for politicians and people who are wanting the votes of those people who already have their eyes open to the whole idea. You know, I was thinking too. One of the things that I like is about you getting a lot of press in Colorado Springs and this NBC thing is that there's got to be a lot of people, some people on the show might not know that Colorado Springs is the home of Air Force Space Command. And there's a huge Air Force military present in Colorado Springs. There's NORAD and Cheyenne Mountain and the whole eastern side or the western side of town along the mountains is all military for miles, and then you have a Shriver's Secret Air Force base out there. So all of these people have to be seeing the UFO nut in your UFO and paranormal exploits.
It's really funny sometimes. Some people I talk to are part of the Air Force or part of the Army, and you're right. We call it the military triangle here between Shriver, Peterson. Then you have Air Force Academy, then you have Fort, then you have Fort Carson, right? So it's almost like a triangle in Colorado Springs that sits in the middle. And I do, I'll be talking to someone and find out that they're, military. Matter of fact, I've been talking with the gentleman who picked up the information about me being terminated, and he's a Vietnam vet. That's had ties to it. So we've been talking. He's 81 years old. He's such a neat guy, and I've talked to him a couple times over the phone. And pretty cool. I have a couple of Vietnam vets that have contacted me. Obviously, it was probably Korean and then Vietnam being 81. But they have their stories, and they're afraid to just talk to anybody about it. But they feel very, very comfortable talking to me, and I'm sure they're very comfortable talking to you, because we won't sit there and ridicule them like other people have. We listen to them, and then we'll ridicule them. No, I'm just kidding. But we listen to them, and we understand. We understand, what they're going through. We understand the experience that, they went through. And then if there's anything that we've read or researched or actually happened to us that is similar to what happened to them, and we can share that with them, then you see that spark. You hear that spark in their voice when it's over the phone, or you see that spark in their eyes where that connection was made. And they're going, wow, it's okay to talk about this. I had a real experience, and now I can talk to you about it, or I can talk. And sometimes you can actually open them up where they'll be more open to talk to other people about it. After that, once they realize, hey, what, it's okay to mention this. We have that ridicule. We have that giggle factor still going on. And then, the Andy Cohen's with NBC start coming out there and going to the investigations with us, and if you have the opportunity to bring someone from the local media with you and you can experience something or see something, that's really a benefit for us because, when they write about it, they write about it in a positive way, not a negative way, where, like you said, some of the reporters, they just kind of, they won't read the book. They won't even, go forward, and then they'll base the whole investigation on just one little part. And those are the people that, there's only too much you can do about people like that. Generally that's their culture of writing, but we're starting to see more and more of a new culture coming out where they're really, really interested in this.
Yeah,
I
think so. One of the cool things you did, too, on your story about the termination was you talked about what great people you had worked with in the sheriff's department and how you're going to miss some of those people. I mean, in general, did you get along well with all of the people you worked with?
Well, other than the commander.
Yeah.
Oh, man. A pleasure. Because I've been on I've been on so many, patrols, we were Baker units, and we're not, we were basically two-man units, and I've worked on details where I've helped back up SWAT traffic, actually, detaining the people that SWAT get. So you're right there in the meat of it, you're right in the action, and you're working with people. Now, on my website, I asked a really good thing, you're in that whole mindset that, they do take a bullet for the person beside you. I mean, that's what they train in. You're in that mindset. And I know from the people that I work with, they would do the same for me. They don't look at you as a uniform investigator, but you're asking about a deputy, and we have a deputy hats on, and this is what we're doing. I've never worked with a deputy that was negative at all, at least negative than what I was doing. And cool. Matter of fact, when we're out in the car and we pull 10-hour shifts, and we're just bullshitting, they're the ones that ask me all these questions because it's new to them. Or it may not be new to them, and they may have some questions of their own, of some of their own experiences. And I've heard a lot. I mean, I've heard a lot of things that, unfortunately, they can't really discuss, other than to maybe a person like me that I could listen to and say, yeah, they're not crazy. That
so they're not teasing you and giving you wedgies and whipping you with their towels in the locker room or anything?
No. They're very, very respectful, and the guys are just the neatest guys, and women too. And even the dogs. Never had a problem with them, and it was just a pleasure working with them for 8 years. So if I'm going to go back and look at anything positive, that's absolutely one of the positive things. The other one, the whole purpose of doing these other things is to give back to the community. Someone said, told me that they goes, well, you're going to miss that. I said, well, not really, I'm still helping the community with doing, UFO investigations, ghost investigations, county relations, stuff like that. Really, you're still kind of helping the community out, trying to understand what's going on. I've always felt compelled, when I was a lot younger to dabble in law enforcement because, I wanted to give back the community that way by volunteering, my time. I'm a cheapskate, so I don't like to dish out a lot of money. I'd rather volunteer my time. Actually, for me, it's always more important that if you can take the time to do something, to volunteer for something in the community, it's a lot better than just handing someone $5 to say, hey, you take care of it. Now, obviously, if you don't have the time, then obviously, it's okay to give someone $5 and take care of it.
Yeah, I know you're going to have more time because you're busy, you're a father. You're a engineer, you're a paranormal investigator. Of course, I used to get frustrated when I'd want to go do an investigation or go to a lecture, and you're like, oh, I got to go volunteer, I got to go work the prison or what have you. So at least now you'll have more time and hopefully maybe some more time for yourself to drive your Harley around the mountains. And
there you go. That's one thing I won't miss, I'll tell you right now. I will not miss strip searches.
Yeah.
Okay, I am done with that. I am so happy I'm done with that. And that's the one thing I will never miss. We have a ghost investigation coming up this Saturday night in Cripple Creek, so I'm really excited about that.
Oh, cool. Are you going to miss the taser training? Because I know you like to get tased.
It's just a thrill of the shock.
You can have your wife tase you at home.
Well, basically what I've done is certain things are just going to have to take the place of other things. So for tasing, I think for that initial shock, I'll use ghost investigations.
Yeah.
And real quick, I know we only have a couple minutes probably left.
Yeah.
But something else that, and this is absolutely the truth, and I don't know whether or not you can relate to this or not. Granted, 8 years I was in reserve, and I've done some pretty, nifty things with them. I've been in a lot of interesting situations, to say the least, and I won't go into too much where, you have to drive and do all kinds of nifty things. But I'll be very honest to you and all the listeners out there, I have never been more scared in my life than doing ghost investigations or cattle mutilations when you're out in the middle of the night, looking for something like that, or, Bigfoot investigations. When you're dealing with something that's completely unknown, that you just can't take a textbook out of a law enforcement library and say, this is how this person would react.
We're out of time. We're totally out of time.
Else. Oh, well, I apologize.
No, good thing to end on. Thank you so much for being on the show. UFONut.com is where you can find more information about Chuck. And we are totally out of time, so join us next week. I don't even have time to tell you who it is. Thanks for listening to OpenMinds.tv.
Bye.